Hi, I'm WTOP film critic Jason Fraley, and I'm here with Kashyar Darvish, the director of a pair of documentaries on the Dalai Lama. There's actually a trio of events coming up here in D.C. Wednesday, February 4th, Darvish's documentaries Dalai Lama Awakening, narrated by Harrison Ford, and another one, Compassion in Action, will both be premiering in D.C., I believe, at the Angelica Pop-Up Theater. And then Thursday morning, the Dalai Lama himself will meet with the president for the National Prayer Breakfast Thursday morning. And then Thursday, February 12th, the two documentaries will play again in Fairfax. So a lot of events coming up here. Kashyar, thanks for joining us on WTOP.
It's my pleasure, Jason. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, before we get into the actual movies and the events that are coming up here, just let's go a little into your background. You have Iranian-American roots through your parents, but you grew up in a small Ohio town, but I also hear you have some D.C. connections, so how does that all work?
Yeah, actually, I was born in Washington at George Washington Hospital, and my parents met at AU. So my mom was a nursing student, and my dad was in political science there.
Nice. And then how did you go from there to Ohio? You said you grew up in a small Ohio town?
I did. Well, actually, after I was born in Washington, I didn't spend, I wasn't in Washington long. Then my family moved to Iran, actually,
for
5 years. And then I lived in this small village in the mountains of Iran, on the Caspian Sea.
Yeah.
And so I grew up with big cows and big lizards and orange trees. And then at age five, my family moved to Ohio, a small college town in Ohio.
When you were in Iran, what brought you guys there? Was it through your mom or your dad?
My dad worked at the Iranian embassy, actually in Washington at that time, in the 60s.
Okay.
And my dad just, I think he just missed home. So my mom, who's American, who's Swedish German American, she went to Iran with a couple of very small kids, and she didn't speak the language. And so she learned Farsi and was this white blonde American woman in this small village
yeah.
in Iran.
Yeah. How many kids? What, you and how many siblings?
I have a sister.
Okay, so it was the four of you guys. You moved there and a total different lifestyle from D.C. Okay.
It was.
And then what brought them to Ohio?
My dad went to graduate school in Ohio for political science.
Gotcha.
And so he got his PhD in Miami University of Oxford, Ohio.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then so you go you've bounced around as a kid, DC, Iran, Ohio. Hmm. And I know you're in LA now. What was it that got you into filmmaking? How did that come about? Were you always fascinated by it as a kid, or did you get into it later, or how did that come about?
I started actually as a writer. So I wrote poems, I wrote stories. And I reached a point where I understood that if I want to reach a wide audience, that the poetry really, really isn't the way for me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Although I love poetry.
Sure.
I wrote a script about Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And the script interested Johnny Cash, actually.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
When was this? Like, what time frame?
This is 1996.
Okay. How did Johnny Cash hear about it?
I had a part in the film of this Native American medicine man. I just felt like it was the right part for Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just called his office. We spoke with his agent first. His agent sent us to his office. And then his office said, sure, send the script to us. And Johnny Cash read the script in his weekend cabin in Henderson, Tennessee, and he said, I want the part.
Wow.
You know, but like a lot of Hollywood projects, I mean, you have a lot of things going. There's a lot of exciting things happening, and we just couldn't raise the money for it.
Right. What was the name of the film called?
It was called Many Hidden Fires.
Okay. And what was that? I know you said Native Americans, but what if there was like a general premise?
Yeah, it's kind of a Native American spiritual Western.
Okay.
You know, and thinking back, it was kind of like Dances with Wolves.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's why I think it wasn't greenlighted. You know, it was too close to Dances with Wolves.
I gotcha. And how did you how did you rebound from that and keep going to make other movies after that? I mean, some people get, you know, something falls through and then they quit. But how did you keep going after that setback?
That's an excellent question. It was kind of my first big film project, and it was a bit tough. But like all things in life, you know, when one door closes, another opens. So about the same time, I was offered my first documentary film, which ended up being broadcast on History Channel.
Oh, cool. What was that one?
And that was called The Black Hawk Waltz, Tales of a Rocky Mountain Town.
Okay.
It was a story of this small mountain town in Colorado, and a sort of like Northern Exposure, that show, you know, kind of a quirky, eccentric sort of place.
Right.
And then they brought in gambling, and that changed the whole fabric of the town. It brought in crime, it brought in, you know, drugs. And so it was about how that town changed.
You seem very drawn to the frontier, the Western. Is it has something to do with maybe the mountains of Iran you were in growing up, or, you know, what do you think that is if you were psychoanalyzing yourself as a filmmaker, or what draws you to that stuff, you think? I love it too. I'm a huge, you know, John Ford fan and all that stuff, but what draws you to that?
You know, my dad loved and loves Westerns. You know, so as a kid, I grew up watching all the Westerns. I mean, he would watch it like a couple Westerns a day. All the John Wayne films, the Red River, and
Howard Hawks, yes.
yes. And also he loved Gunsmoke.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've watched every episode of Gunsmoke that there ever was. And of course, as a kid, everything that we watch, everything that we do kind of affects us and makes us who we are.
Sure. Sometimes in ways that we don't even understand. Only looking back, sometimes you can kind of see it. But at the time, you're just watching, you know, you're watching a fun movie with your dad. And then, you know, flash forward 30 years and then you're realizing, oh, wow, that really influenced me. What do you think it was as an Iranian man? How do you think your dad got into the American frontier culture? And, you know, why do you think he was drawn to that?
That's a great question. I've actually thought about that a little bit. I think it's because the values of the West, honor, you know, being honest and doing what's right. I think those values mirrored his values growing up in this small village in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And when he grew up in Iran, it wasn't the fanatical place it is now.
Right.
You know, it was before the Shah's time, and you know, it was kind of a hybrid of the West and East.
Right. Yeah. So after this History Channel piece that you did, how did you get from that to the point in your filmmaking career where you decided to do these documentaries on the Dalai Lama? Tell me about that process of where these films, the genesis for these films came.
Yeah, you know, I about that time in my life, I was kind of going through my own search of, you know, finding what's life about. You know, how can I be the most happy I can be?
Mm-hmm. And are you like in your 20s, 30s here? What age do you think around this time?
I was in my 20s.
Okay.
I believe as an artist, if you're an artist, your art reflects your life, mm-hmm. and your life reflects your work.
Absolutely.
So as I was kind of going through this search for meaning and happiness and what's my purpose in life? That sort of bled into my films. Each of the films that I work on are really about discovering something. you know, and understanding sort of a deeper meaning and truth about something. Mm-hmm. And so my films eventually led to, I did a film about this American woman named Peace Pilgrim, who walked across America for peace, starting in the Korean War period when no one was doing that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for that project, I was interviewing notable thinkers for that film. And at that time, and this was 1999, and I was thinking, who best represents and symbolizes peace? And at that time, it wasn't as obvious as it is now that it's the Dalai Lama, you know. So that's how I first met him.
Mm. How did you reach out to him initially with such a huge figure? You know, it's like reaching out to the Pope or something. How do you actually make that contact to get him to participate in, you know, in interviews?
We just called his office.
just like Johnny Cash.
Just like Johnny Cash. And like Harrison Ford, same sort of thing.
If you don't try, you don't know.
And you learn that the celebrities are as human as we are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they want to support positive things too. Mm-hmm. And they have certain interests in their lives, of certain topics and projects. And so we called the Dalai Lama's office and just spoke about the project. And I was pleasantly surprised that they said yes, but we have to wait 10 months.
Why was why the wait?
I think he was just very busy.
Mm-hmm.
So he has so much going on. I mean, so many meetings, so many appointments. He travels. I don't see how a man in his late 70s can travel as much as he does.
It's pretty remarkable. Could we talk about each of the documentaries separately? Kind of, you know, what's the focus?
Sure.
Yeah, like, so you mentioned Harrison Ford. Let's start with that one. So Harrison Ford narrates Dalai Lama Awakening, in which you're the director and producer. Let's focus on that one. What's the main focus of that documentary?
That film, Dalai Lama Awakening, is a film about these 40 innovative thinkers who traveled to India to meet the Dalai Lama and speak about how to change the world.
Okay.
And in the process, they kind of learn that in order to change the world, you have to change yourself first.
Okay.
You know, so it was initially sort of, you know, this outward or external journey to India, but the real real journey was this inner journey for everyone who's there.
And were these people from all over the world? The innovative thinkers you're talking about?
They were. A lot of them were from America,
mm-hmm.
but there were some from Asia and Europe.
Did you interview these people before they went there and after, or how did you, you know, decide, you know, what you were going to shoot?
Yeah, I interviewed a few of them before the trip, but with documentary film, it's all about the unexpected. You know, you have a certain plan
sure.
when you're first starting out on a documentary, and you have. You know, you have a story in mind. You have a vision, but then real life comes in.
Right.
You know, everyone's human, and they, you know, their lives change, and they sort of do things that are unexpected, and that happened on this film. You know, and we, and the thing that was really interesting is. Everyone had the intention of going on this trip to create positive change in the world. You know, it was very everyone was inspired and expected this kind of, you know, this kind of happy, almost like a love fest with the Dalai Lama. But then as they arrived in India, their humanness and their egos surfaced.
Right.
You know, and so they had to actually handle their own egos to finally arrive at the point where they realized that they, in order to change the world, you had to change yourself. You had to open your heart more. You had to be more clear about how each person can sort of create positive change in the world around them, one person at a time, one step at a time, one day at a time. I've heard from audiences and critics that's really kind of a, you know, it's a personal, intimate experience with the Dalai Lama.
How much interview time do you have? Is it like a one-on-one interview, you talking to the Dalai Lama?
Yes, I interviewed him for the film twice. We also followed him around and just filmed him.
I assume it was your first time ever meeting him, right?
It was.
What was your impression of the man in the flesh? I mean, we've all read about him and heard about him and seen him on TV. What was your first thought upon meeting him face-to-face in terms of, you know, personality? You know, did anything strike you, surprise you?
You know, what struck me about the Dalai Lama is his extraordinary presence that he has. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear that he's a compassionate person. You know that he sort of impacted and impressed millions around the world. But when you get in the same room with him, you know, you realize that here's a person that's putting the highest of what he believes into practice. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sorry for getting a little spiritual about it, or, you know, a little...
By all means, get as spiritual as you want. We're talking about the Dalai Lama.
Cool. But I really felt like I was in the room with him. I was interviewing him. I was 4 feet away from him. I felt the room fill with this kind of warm, compassionate glow.
Wow.
You know, you could feel it. The Dalai Lama that you see when he's speaking in a stadium of 20,000 is the same person that you experience one-on-one.
That's awesome to hear. I always love hearing that.
Yeah. The same with Harrison Ford, too, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, same with Harrison Ford. So
He had the same warm glow that filled the room? Spiritual experience?
Oh, he had the Harrison Ford glow.
Oh, yeah. That's more of the Ark of the Covenant glowing, I think.
Yes, exactly. He's holding that golden head, golden statue. We actually had three choices for a narrator, three options who we were sort of considering. One was Harrison Ford. The second was Richard Gere.
Okay.
You know, who's kind of associated with the Dalai Lama and Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And the third was Johnny Depp.
Okay.
You know, I thought would also be a really interesting choice.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really felt like Harrison Ford was kind of the everyman's man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of this, you know, his personality is kind of grounding, his voice is grounding.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was a perfect complement to the Dalai Lama, who's an icon of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And so Harrison Ford, when he speaks in the film, he actually speaks during chapter breaks in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So he reads a quote or he says, you know, grounds the audience in an idea.
Gotcha.
You serve an anchor for the audience at certain times in the film.
I gotcha. Was it a lot of him recording, you know, just, you know, reading certain transcript in some studio somewhere else, or did you get much face-to-face time with him?
No. He was sort of the person I felt like was best for the film. So we contacted his office. We explained the project, and we sent them a script and some materials about the film. And so Harrison Ford was flying somewhere, and he had the had the materials with him. And then when he landed his plane, he called his office and said, "I like the idea of the film. It sounds very inspiring. I want to support the Dalai Lama. I'll do it."
Awesome.
And so 6 weeks later, we had him in a recording studio in Los Angeles. He was so gracious. You know, our original plan was to record each line of narration three times. I ended up recording the narration nine times.
Oh, wow.
And even after the ninth, he still mentioned that I can... record it again if you want me to. You know, so he understood this is something that I really learned from working with Harrison Ford. That Harrison Ford and some other celebrities really want to use their celebrity for something good and positive.
Right, a positive change in the world, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they have all the fame they want. They have all the money they need, but things like this bring them kind of this deep satisfaction.
Right, it's true. So, in a way, as thrilled as you were to have him in your movie, he probably was just as thrilled to be able to, you know, be a part of something like that. Mm. All right, awesome. Let's talk about the other one, Compassion in Action. That's the other documentary that we'll be playing here in D.C. What's the main focus on this one compared to the other one?
Well, where Dalai Lama Awakening is sort of this inner journey of personal transformation for the characters in the film, it's kind of an experiential film for the characters and for the audience. Compassion in Action is kind of taking the highest ideas from Dalai Lama Awakening and showing kind of how to put those things into practice.
Gotcha.
So it's like a call to action film.
I gotcha. And what are some of those calls to action? How does that visually play out in the movie?
That's a great film question. I can tell you're a filmmaker. I can tell you're a filmmaker. Well, I think in Compassion Action, the characters kind of, one thing they kind of realize and understand is that we're all connected and we're all interdependent. Mm-hmm. If someone is suffering in my family, that's going to affect me. You know, if we're the U.S. and you know, there's war in Afghanistan, that's going to affect us eventually. Mm-hmm. So I think the thinkers, the characters in the film, through their experience with the Dalai Lama, they came to realize that they had to take responsibility for doing their part in solving problems, not just in the world, but sort of in themselves and, you know, with their families and in their towns and cities and communities. So, and that, you know, as a filmmaker, and you asked a great film question, you know, how do you cinematically,
right,
you know, show ideas, you know? That's, I think, that I think is one of the most challenging things about making a film that's not just about action or not just
right.
about...
You're trying to portray an idea, so, yeah, you can have Harrison Ford read a quote, you can, you know, have the Dalai Lama say something, but how do you make it visual, too? So, yeah, I'm curious how you went about that.
And the way that we approach that is you show characters changing over time. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. And two, you film with five cameras, which we did. And then three, it's not only about the inner journey of the characters. It's about this, you know, this exotic journey to India.
Right.
You know, it's about being on the trains, being on the buses. It's about, you know, seeing 100 Buddhist monks chanting in this temple. And we actually brought a crane to India.
As in for crane shots, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm still surprised how we got it through Indian customs. But
describe that scene, bringing the crane through Indian customs. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We need to go into this for a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's a small crane.
Okay.
It's a small crane. But, you know, when you go through, you know, when you pick up your bags in baggage claim and you grab your 8-foot-long bag that has this crane that's kind of folded in it, you sweat a little bit. You know, you think, you know, oh no, okay, I'm going to walk through customs and I have to look like a tourist.
You are Ben Affleck in Argo at that point.
That's kind of, yeah, yes.
you're Paul Heinrich with the exit visas from Casablanca at that point.
and we had, and just, you know, and imagine that we had this crew of 18, you know, going on this trip. So it's like this large group. I mean, I just said, let's just split up the bags amongst all of us. So we all, you know, have like a maximum of 3 bags with us. So surprising that not one bag was searched.
That's great. So the crane made it through A-okay.
It did. It did.
That's fantastic. Did it pay off? I mean, did you get the crane shots you wanted?
Lots of them. Lots of them. That's, and that's something I think that is missing in some documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are those kind of sweeping shots.
Right, that you would associate with a narrative fiction film, documentaries that you think they're too either locked off static shots or more just, you know, handheld cinema verite, but not the big production value sweeping shots. I would like to see more docs have them too. I agree.
Yes. Yes. And I'm going to get a helicopter drone actually very soon.
Nice.
So I'm doing a film, one of our next projects actually is being filmed on the island of Sri Lanka.
Oh, wow.
And it's a film about these deaf teen dancers in this small little village school in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they overcome their unhappiness with being deaf through learning intricate Sri Lankan dance. I mean, even though they're deaf, they learn how to dance this amazing dance.
That's awesome.
I mean, I want to bring a helicopter drone to Sri Lanka on the next trip.
Like a drone with a GoPro or something? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
That's right. Yeah, just make sure it's not a windy day.
That's true. How do you explain to customs you're bringing in this helicopter spy camera? You know, I mean,
right.
A government might think you're trying to spy on.
Right. No, that's really cool. Awesome. Well, best of luck with that documentary.
Thank you.
About the deaf dancers in Sri Lanka. That sounds cool. In terms of these two Dalai Lama documentaries, when you screen them here in D.C., are you going to screen them in that order? So the Dalai Lama Awakening, which is kind of the ideas, you know, thing, and then follow it up with the call to action. Do you order them that way for a reason?
Yes. I've heard from audiences that Dalai Lama Awakening and Compassion Action really complement each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's kind of a complete experience.
Sure.
So I'm at the Washington premiere, which is Wednesday, February 4th. I'm at the Angelica Pop-Up Theater,
mm-hmm.
and the second area screening, which is in Fairfax, Virginia, on the 12th at the Angelica at Mosaic Theater. We're going to screen both films. We're calling it a Dalai Lama a double feature.
Nice.
But then after each of the films, I'll do a Q&A.
Oh, so you're doing the Q&A both on the 4th, February 4th and on the 12th?
I am.
Okay, great.
And in between, I'm doing a premiere in New York City.
So just again, to recap for our listeners, the two documentaries, Dalai Lama Awakening and Compassion in Action, will premiere in D.C. at the Angelica Pop-Up, which is in Northeast D.C., on Wednesday, February 4th. The next day, the Dalai Lama will be at the National Prayer Breakfast with the president. And then if you can't make it to the event on the 4th, which we probably can't because it's sold out unless you already have tickets, you can definitely come out on Thursday, February 12th at the Angelica Mosaic, the beautiful theater they have there in Fairfax, Virginia. And in both cases, you can talk to our wonderful producer-director here and ask him your questions, anything we didn't ask. So is there anything else you want to add?
Just that the whole schedule for the 100 City Tour, as well as specific information about tickets for the Washington screenings and film trailers are on the film's website, DalaiLamaFilm.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing your work with us.
Thank you, Jason. It was a real pleasure speaking with you about filmmaking and Harrison Ford and life.
From John Wayne to Johnny Cash to Harrison Ford to the Dalai Lama, I think we covered it all.